Welcome to the Militant Grind Show, where we dive deep into the journeys of those who've mastered the art of being their best selves. Every episode is a testament to resilience, dedication, and the pursuit of excellence, embodying our tagline, the most honorables. Here you'll find inspiration, insights, and strategies to elevate your life in every aspect. For more empowering content and to join our community of achievers, visit us at militantgrind.com. Let's embark on this journey together because the grind never stops. Are you ready for a radical transformation? Join the ranks of the most honorables. Our proven methods forge resilience, sharpen strategic thinking, and unlock your true potential. We'll challenge you mentally, physically, and spiritually, preparing you to overcome any obstacle. Visit militantgrindacademy.com and begin your evolution. Greatness awaits. Forge your path, ignite your future. Most of all, join the movement.
Welcome to the Militant Grind Show. Today, I'm very honored to introduce a special guest, Daniel Spencer. Daniel, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, man. Thanks. Good to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, no doubt, man. It's crazy how, like, we both are in L.A., and now we're both making it happen. First, we were about to do it virtually, and it was like, hey, man, I'd rather just do it in person.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, boom, you know? So, yeah, man, I was doing some research on you, and, you know, for me, you know, I never was, like, over 200 pounds or anything like that until recently when I started working out, right? And so seeing someone like you, like, the way you look now, and then, like, looking at your picture, seeing that you were over 300 pounds, and I was just like, whoa.
Almost. Yeah, I was almost 300 pounds.
You were almost 300 pounds. Yeah. And so how long were you, you know, like that?
I was always a chubby kid, like, pretty much my whole life, right? Being a teenager, I was overweight. Into high school, overweight. You know, I didn't really jump on a scale until I got to the ninth grade. That was for football. Mm-hmm. And it said, like, 205. And you know, it didn't really mean that much to me. I didn't think about it that much. But then, you know, being second string, mm-hmm. you know, not really being the fastest or the strongest, you know, I felt it. People would, you know, make jokes or whatever at the pool parties. You know, they'd say, you know, Daniel's got bitch tits or whatever, right? Shit started to sting a lot. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't like I came from an unhealthy family. You know, my dad worked out a lot. Physically demanding work, but it's just for me, just kind of had no control over what I would do aside from whatever was being cooked at home, you know.
Right.
So
right.
Just sneaking snacks or soda, stuff like that. But yeah, it was kind of hard at first, but you know, and I carried that all the way up into adulthood. Mm-hmm. I lost some weight once I started getting into the workforce. I got down to, like, actually about 175 pounds, and then started working with the city, and it was just kind of like a different lifestyle, right? Started making more money, and the culture there mm-hmm. was a little bit different. We drank a lot, we ate out a lot, and about 5 years, I gained 100 pounds.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's when I got to my heaviest. Was I was about 290, 295.
Mm-hmm. Man, that's crazy. Like, I couldn't imagine being that big, man. It's like, but when I hear people say that, I'm like, was there ever a time where you just thought, damn, I'm getting too fat and I need to just chill, you know? Like,
yeah.
Or was it like, oh, I'm just keep buying bigger clothes, F it, you know what I'm saying?
You know, it was both of that. It was all of it, you know? But for me, I just didn't have the willpower, maybe. I didn't think I could really achieve, like, weight loss. I would try different things, you know, eating differently, and then just fall off. Mm-hmm. But looking at photos, you know, I wasn't happy with the way I looked. Definitely wasn't happy with the way I felt. Stretch marks on my stomach, you know. And my wife would tell me all the time, too, like, Daniel, you wake up in the middle of the night, you're not breathing.
Wow.
I wake up with massive heartburn because I drink a lot, you know.
Yeah.
I would get blackout drunk almost every night. And late at night, get the munchies. Go hit the drive-thru, right? Mm-hmm. So it was hard. It was hard. It was affecting me emotionally, mentally. It was affecting me at work.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely, once I realized that I needed to change some of my habits, right, I started with getting sober. That's where it all started. I used to think that you know, my personal development, my health journey, whatever, started when I hit the gym, but really it didn't, mm-hmm. right? It started 13 years ago when I finally decided you need to quit drinking, because if I continue these habits, I'm sure I'm going to pass them on to my kids.
Right.
My daughter was, she was about 6 years old, and I would have her, you know, go get daddy a beer, you know, and think it was cute, shit like that. Then watching my son growing up, right? Like he's 2 years old, 3 years old. And I'm thinking, man, if I keep this shit up, what am I showing them? Mm-hmm. Right. What type of man is my son going to grow up to be? Or what type of man is my daughter going to look for when she gets older, right? Because what is she comfortable with? Like, I was not comfortable with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see that being a catalyst of change. And I tell people, like, you have to be selfless, you know, and it's not about you. It's more so about the people that's looking at you. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's like, take you out of the equation. How are your decisions affecting other people? And once you realize that and you're, you know, not only thinking about yourself, it is so easy to change.
Yeah. The night that I actually quit drinking, that's when it hit me. That exactly right there hit me, man. Because what I was doing was affecting everybody else. I would leave work and go straight to the liquor store. And it was an hour and a half drive home. And by the time I got home, I'd be drunk. It was just, I was bored, right? I was dealing with stuff internally that I didn't know how to work out in a healthy way. Mm-hmm. So for me, I was just pushed down the pain or whatever with drinking, right? Or weed. Like when I was a teenager, I used to get high all the time. Right up until I had to take a drug test for the city.
Mm-hmm.
I was always like an addict of some sort, right? But once I was at a Super Bowl party and had my kids with me, and I could have called my wife and said, hey, come pick us up, right? But I didn't. I had that ego. That liquid courage was in me, and I put the kids in the car, man, and I drove home. And once I got home, it hit me like a ton of bricks. Like, dude, what are you doing? You know, you're putting it all on the line every day, because my wife doesn't work, and my job requires me to have, you know, a commercial license.
Mm-hmm.
So every day while I'm driving home, I'm risking it, getting a DUI. But that night when I realized that, I just risked, like, what if I'd have gotten a car crash?
You know? Yeah.
It scared the hell out of me, man. And I had to change. And that was the best change that I've made in my life was getting sober. And it wasn't easy, you know. I checked myself into a substance abuse program the very next day, and I was going to meetings 3 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been life-changing, you know. Right after that, I kind of just started losing weight automatically just because I was drinking so many calories. And
You're drinking so many calories, so you were losing weight.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that, because the sugar content, the acid, and the alcohol. And I often tell people that I'm like, alcohol is acidic, and you're not really drinking anything to balance that acid in your body. So you're going to be sick and you're going to get a lot of diseases, you know, because people aren't even drinking water that's, you know,
right,
alkaline or purified or anything like that either. So if it's just mostly sodas, you know, alcohol, all of these things, it's like, it's going to blow you up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And right after I quit drinking, I mean, like, my skin started getting clearer.
Mm-hmm.
I just started feeling better, right? Losing the weight, obviously, elevated my confidence. I was a better employee. I was listening, conversating more with my wife. So our relationship got better. Like, everything just got better, man.
It's
amazing.
Yeah, it's crazy how, like, everything starts internally first. You know, we try to basically affect the outside external things to make it, you know, make it seem like that's going to make our life better. You know, like, oh, I have to do this, or I have to get this, or I have to get this item. But at the end of the day, everything is internal. Like, once you fix you, everything else will be okay.
Yeah, everything else just goes in alignment with it.
Right, and so I often tell people, I'm like, you know, even with men, you know, because there's a lot of things going on online where people are talking about women and getting in shape and things like that. And I'm like, you know, don't you think your woman wants to mess with a guy who's fit, that's active? You don't think she's attracted to that?
Yeah.
And then you're talking about, well, she's not putting out and this is that. I'm like, bro, look at you.
Right.
you know, like, what are you doing to keep her into you? You know what I mean? And that makes like a hell of a difference, man. Cause it's like, once you see, once you fall off, she will fall off.
Right.
You know, if you're gaining weight, she's going to gain weight. If you're losing weight, and I also saw this on your profile, mm-hmm. your wife's going to lose weight as well. And you guys did a challenge together, right?
Right.
Right, and lost the weight together. And yes. it's just, and my dad taught me that. He was like, if you want your woman to be in shape and to eat right, you have to do the same thing. And he's a testament of that because I've never seen my mom out of shape, fat, or anything like that. Yeah. Like, they eat super healthy. They have a garden. They juice their own vegetables and fruits and stuff, like apple trees, all of that, right? And so it's like, I feel like that's something that a lot of men lack because of, you know, just because of the world and society and things like that. Like, they're not more so thinking about themselves. It's more so like, okay, I have to get along with everybody, you know?
Yeah.
Because people ask me like, oh, you don't drink? What? Oh my God, you don't? I'm like, nah, it's not that big of a deal to me. Like, I could still have a good time.
Right.
You know, I don't need to be drunk. And you probably don't want to be around me if I was to drink anyway.
And that's kind of what sucks is that it's like if we're sober or we're trying to eat healthier or become healthier people, it's abnormal now.
Something's wrong with us.
Something's wrong with us. But it's normal for somebody to go hit the drive-thru every single day. Like, you're like, oh, it's okay with that, right? Mm-hmm. Let's just normalize that and let's say, you know, use phrases like dad bod or,
right.
you know.
Being happy and complacent with happy, these things. I'm like.
Body positivity or whatever.
I'm more kids than the average guy. And I don't have a dad bod. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's like, I don't really, I love that because I'm like, no, don't put that dad bod. I mean, I sometimes hashtag it just to like circumvent what a dad bod is. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Because mm-hmm. it's like, oh, I don't have time. Like, you have time. You could do push-ups.
Oh, yeah.
You could stand in one place and go like this and exercise.
Yeah, you know? Audit your time.
Right.
Like, really look at where you're spending your time that you say you don't have.
Yeah.
Right? Like, how many hours a day are you scrolling social media that's not gaining you anything? Everybody says they don't have time. There's plenty of time. I make time. I get up at 2:35 every single day, Monday through Saturday.
Damn, for real?
Every day. Every day.
What time do you go to sleep?
9:30, 10 o'clock.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Oh, my body was shut down.
Yeah. I mean, because for me, that's my, I get up and that's where I do my reading, my journaling, mm-hmm. right? And then I go straight to the gym. I work out. You know, record some content for my social media.
Yeah.
For my Instagram. And then I go straight to work, right? So mm-hmm. personal development first, straight into business, go home and take care of the family, right? Because if, you know, there's always an excuse not to work out at the end of the day and we'll make up any single one that we can.
Right.
I got to work late or something happens at the house or you're just too tired.
Yeah.
So that's why I do it, man. I get up early and I hit it first thing in the morning.
Yeah, because you make it a priority, but you're prioritizing your health. And I had a conversation with somebody the other day. I was like, man, self-care is a full-time job. Like, it takes so much effort and energy to be consciously aware of your self-care that it's like, man, it's hard to even think about anything else. Because
yeah.
a lot of people are like, hey, have you seen this show? I'm like, nah, man. I got to read. I got to listen to an audio book. I go to the gym, you know, 6 days a week. I really don't have time to watch anything.
I don't.
And if I do watch it, I'll fall asleep. So.
Yeah. That used to be my biggest thing. Like, family time was either like going to the movies or something like that. Right. And if we go to the movies, I'm out.
Yeah. You know?
Because once I'm comfortable, I'm out.
Oh yeah.
But, The Office, we always watch The Office, man. At home.
What? Oh, yeah. Same here. Bro, when they took it off of Netflix, I was hurt. You know, I was just like, ah. And then I had to get Peacock. But, yeah, it was a tradition in my house to watch the episode of The Office at night every single night.
Yeah, that's what we do.
For sure. Like, recurring because it's like, you know, you're going to sleep happy. You're laughing. It's only 20, 30 minutes.
Right.
You know, so it's not a bunch of time.
Right.
But when it comes to those hour-long shows, I'm like, I cannot do this. But The Office was always cool because you're going to bed with joy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, and a lot of times, I mean, before I started really prioritizing my health, it was that, right? Like, we just get into a show, binge watch it, and then, mm-hmm. you know, 2 or 3 hours are gone. It's like, well, what could you have done to really benefit you in 2 or 3 hours? You know, a whole lot.
You know, it's crazy because I honestly don't even get into certain shows because I know that I could binge watch it. Because, you know, like growing up, you know, you miss 8 o'clock, you're never gonna see the show again. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So it was like, you have to be there. You can't be late. You know, you could probably tape it. You know what I'm saying? Or when TiVo came out, that was a big thing. But now it's more so like, you could watch the whole season if you want to.
Right.
In one sitting. You know? So it's like, how are people gonna have this discipline to like not binge watch?
Yeah.
You know, just being real with yourself, like, man, oh man, I wonder what's gonna happen. Oh man, man, I can't wait. Well, why don't you just watch it right now? You know what I'm saying? So I'm just like, okay, I'm just not gonna get into any shows at all. You know, if it's not a movie, I'm not really rocking with it, because I already know how I'm gonna be. You know, it's like that real self-discipline. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, if I'm watching something, it's usually, you know, for self-development, you know, like a podcast.
All right, so Daniel, what are some ways that you like keep your discipline with like all of the stuff that you have going on, being a husband, being a father, you know, training people, and also working as a lineman, right?
Yeah, I do underground line work.
Right. So how do you just keep this? Because that sounds like a hell of a lot of discipline. Oh, also, you have a college student.
I do.
So it's like, man, money just, right?
Yeah. I just think a lot about who I used to be, and who I want to be, who I want to show up for, right? I want to show up every day for my kids. I want to show them that hard work will pay off. Mm-hmm. I think a lot about my coworkers, my family, people that are struggling with the things that I've struggled with, you know, substance abuse, alcoholism, you know, an unhealthy relationship with food. And I think, you know, if I fall off, that's going to be somebody else's excuse, you know. And I'm not perfect. You know, there's days I might slip up on my diet, or, you know, I hit the snooze button. I you know, I'm human.
Right.
And I used to always try and push myself and think, like, you're the baddest motherfucker around. Mm-hmm. And that's what I try and tell myself, but there's other days where I don't. But I try and act like, I tell myself, you know, if I slip, then that's their way out. I don't want to be looked at as a quitter anymore, because I've quit things before. Mm-hmm. In the past, and it hurts, and there's opportunities that I missed before, and having that regret is heavy.
Right.
You say, yeah, I have a college student, and this is her first year, and it's hard for her being away from home, and my wife and I were kind of urging her to study somewhere that's not close to home, right? Not a commute.
Where's she at?
She's in Santa Cruz up north.
Oh yeah, no.
Okay. Yeah, so I mean, if it's a drive, it's a 6-hour drive, you know, or she has to jump on a plane and get here in half a day. But we took her back home for a Christmas break, and she calls us later that night. She's like, "I want to come home. I can't do it. Like, I miss the house. I miss you guys." I go, "Yeah." I go, "I get it." I go, "Quitting is easy. Quitting is very, very easy, but having that regret, living with that regret, is going to be a lot harder, and it's going to last a lot longer." Mm-hmm. And not only that, just think about what you're learning there, right? Independence, how to think for yourself. And I think some of the decisions that my wife and I made for ourselves and for our kids put her in a great position where she's going to be successful. Mm-hmm. You know, being a good example, keeping those disciplines every day. And that was one of my biggest fears, was her going to school and getting into some of these bad habits that I had growing up, or that I had got into like in my high school years, right? Mm-hmm. So that changing some of those, quitting the drinking, not smoking weed anymore, living a healthier lifestyle for myself. You know, she's never really had those temptations, even through high school, right? She didn't go to parties. She didn't look out for parties. Like, I was always trying to find the party.
Right.
You know. So that's why, man. You know, because I want my people to be better than they can be.
Right.
I want them to be better than they are, happier, more confident. And it starts with your habits. Mm-hmm. You know, because if you don't have a healthy habit with a relationship with food, you're going to gain weight. You're not going to feel good physically. You're not going to feel good mentally. Alcoholism, I mean, it's huge. Yeah. It's huge in both sides of my family and a lot of people's families, right?
Especially mine. You go to, you know, go to my family's house. Who wants a shot? Me. Right. You know, it's a tradition. You know, like a lot of us have. Well, I would say, for me personally, I was the one that would drink, and everybody would know. You know, people would be like, "Man, you need to stop because this don't mix right with you like it does everybody else." Yeah, because my dad will say, like, "You have the same alcohol gene that my father had. Like, I'll just turn into a different person." You know. And with that, I was like, I don't like to be that person. I don't want to experience it. Alcohol's nasty to me anyway. You know, there's never an alcoholic drink where I'm like, oh, my God, I just love this. It's refreshing.
Right.
You know, so I have to force myself to drink it, wake up, stomach hurt, feeling bad, feeling dehydrated. So I was like, what is the cost benefit of this? You know what I'm saying? Right. Like, what am I getting? You know, even people be like, oh, well, drunk sex. I'm like, drunk sex isn't even all that. Like, you can barely even, right. You know, you can barely get up because your blood is thinner and, you know what I'm saying? So I was like, I just don't see it. You know what I mean? Like, when you really think about it, it's like, what benefit am I getting? And I could honestly say it's more so feeling free, reckless, you know, courage. You know what I'm saying? Like you said, the liquid courage. But I started to think about this. I was like, why don't I feel like this naturally? Why don't I feel courageous? You know, like, okay, man, there's some girls at this party. All right, cool. I'm a drink so I could go up to them and talk to them and not feel, you know what I'm saying? Right. Like anything about it. I'm a just, you know, and that would be my thing. And I'm like, what is it about you that's making you not want to do it just naturally anyway?
Yeah, a low level of self-confidence.
Yeah.
Gee, that was huge.
But if you don't know that you have a low level of self-confidence,
yeah,
you know, or insecurity, you know, it's hard for some men to admit that, you know? Like, they're not going to say, man, I'm insecure. No. I'm right. Like, no, I'm not, man. I'm making money or I'm doing this or I'm doing that. You know what I mean? And then I started to go within myself and be like, nah, man, you have to, like, really face these issues head on.
Right. Yeah, absolutely, you have to.
Yeah.
Right? Because that, if not, then you're just going to keep engaging in those things that are going to make you feel like that false level of confidence. And for me, that was huge. Right. And I think having that accident, like I burned my face. I was.
Oh, the line while you were working, right?
Well, I was working. You know, I burnt my face. I had third degree burns. And for me, that was my ego, right? That level of over self confidence. It was just like,
damn.
Yeah. Yeah, that was it, man.
Oh my God.
I was in the hospital for 10 days. I had 2 skin graft surgeries.
It burns your head too?
No, just my face.
Oh, okay.
My face and my ears. But right there, like, that was really come to terms. Like, I just, because I had been electrocuted before,
mm-hmm.
and that's when I used to drink. And instead of, you know, really talking about how I felt about it, my fear, that was a huge one for me. I was scared to go back to work.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't talk about it. I just drank through it. But with that accident right there, I mean, I couldn't really hide any of the pain physically. And then emotionally, I was like, it's chewing me up inside. You know, I would have nightmares. I didn't want to go back to work again.
Oh, so how did that happen?
So we were doing some switching in an underground vault.
Mm-hmm.
And we weren't following procedure. We weren't communicating.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a 4,800 volt cross phase, right? When you get two phases, opposite phases together, and you put them together, it's called a cross phase.
Mm-hmm.
And we were doing some switching. We weren't following procedure. And we got two opposite phases together. We closed in a switch, and it blew up right in front of my face. I was holding the lead right here.
Also, the sparks and
it was an explosion.
Oh, so you So if you would have been touching opposite sides of it, you would have died, right?
Yeah. Well, we have protective equipment. Like we wear rubber gloves.
Oh, okay.
We're standing on rubber blankets to isolate ourselves from ground potential.
Mm-hmm.
But the intense heat, it was like a bomb went off in there.
Yeah.
It melted porcelain. It melted copper bus bars. It got to like over 4,000 degrees.
What?
Yeah.
How close were you to it?
About 11 inches face, right?
And it got 4,000 degrees, 11 inches to your face?
Yeah. And it burned for 2 full seconds. The system protection that we had, it was like a circuit breaker.
Yeah.
It failed. So it had to reach a certain level of fault current to trip the high side breakers, which was like 4,500 amps or something like that.
Oh, my God.
And, man, talk about time slowing down, you know. Time slowed down. Those 2 seconds were the longest 2 seconds of my life. You know, I was having conversations in my head, like, when is this going to stop? If this doesn't stop, you're going to die. And then it stopped. You know, everything went black. And I realized that I wasn't dead because the pain in my chest from all the smoke inhalation.
Yeah.
That was intense, man.
Yeah. So did it blind you for a little bit too?
No.
You had protective glasses?
Yes. Oh, that's okay. The only part of my face that didn't get burned was right around my eyes.
Oh, wow.
And, but immediately right after, I was like, get out the hole. Let's get, you know, paramedics were there.
Mm-hmm. So you got yourself out the hole?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they climbed. I mean, they sent a ladder down into the vault. We mm-hmm. climbed out. And then it was within a couple of minutes, I was in the ambulance on my way to the hospital.
I know you were screaming every walk of the way, right?
No, I remember every second of it, man. And
you were just calm walking up the ladder, like
I was. Okay. Yeah, I was trying to stay calm for sure. Mm-hmm. I didn't know the severity of my burns. I thought the worst. You know, I thought that my face was melted, like my jaw bones were exposed and everything.
Oh, they were?
No.
Oh, okay.
No,
okay.
But I was just trying to stay calm. Like I didn't want to go into shock.
Right.
But then once I got out of the hole, I just started taking photos. You know, I started taking photos of my face right away, and it was just charred. It was gray. I had a full beard, long hair, and it was all gone.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And every step of the way, I was taking a photo. Right. That was that photo was after my first surgery.
Mm-hmm.
But after I woke up from the initial surgery, I was in my hospital room. I grabbed my phone, took a photo. After the second surgery, woke up, took a photo. When the bandages came off, I took a photo. I didn't realize what I was really doing, just documenting every step of this, my rehab, you know, not only physically, but like internally, mentally. 4 months after that accident, right before I went back to work, I was still having nightmares, still scared. And I go, man, you really need to face this, right? Like we were saying, facing those problems.
Mm-hmm.
I looked up a psychiatrist, psychologist, and I went to see a therapist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really try to work through the fears of getting back to work, right? That was my main focus. It was hot. I can't be in fear doing this job.
Right.
I'm not going to be useful. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be useful to myself, to my coworkers, to my family. I'll be more of a liability than an asset.
Right. How long were you out of work?
5 months.
5 months.
Yeah, that happened in April 2020, 4/27/21.
Did you like talk to a lawyer and an attorney? Try to keep, you know, like,
so,
man, come on, man.
I mean, yeah. Yeah, I opened up a workers' comp claim, and actually I still go to treatment. I still go get skin treatments. They did like laser treatments. I was getting bleaching creams for the discoloration of my skin.
Yeah. Wow, how long ago was this?
It's gonna be 2 years.
Oh, wow, is that recent?
Yeah, it's pretty
recent. Oh, and you were kind of, so you just started like losing the weight within like a year or something?
No, I started my weight loss journey probably about 5.5 years ago.
Okay, because you were a little chubby on the photo, so I wasn't sure. You, I mean, you definitely ain't how you are now, but yeah. But you were really like 2.
When I first started, when my wife and I joined the gym, I weighed in. I remember it was 267.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. And you were at 295. But then when you went through the accident, how much weight were you?
I was probably like around just over 200 pounds.
Okay. And yeah. Where are you at now?
Right now I'm at like 176.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. So once I really started getting into coaching, that was like about a year after the accident.
Mm-hmm. 176. God damn.
Yeah. I got all the way down to 150, like 155.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, like single percent body fat.
And you're like you're Mexican, right?
Yep.
So I know your family was like, "Are you okay?" Like,
yeah, a lot of actually people at work were scared to ask me what I was doing. That some people were like, "We thought you were sick."
Yeah.
You know, like I was like, "No, it's just training."
No, 155 is small, bro.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't even imagine how I would look at that weight. I mean, even 170, I'll probably look crazy, you know, but golly.
Yeah, yeah, it wasn't easy, man.
Yeah.
It wasn't easy. It's having such a low fat, right? Low testosterone. I was always tired.
Mm-hmm.
I had like that death face, you know, where I
just. Oh, at 155?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't look good. I didn't feel good. So I just started reverse dieting. Slowly adding a little bit of weight back. And mm-hmm. I mean, right now, 175, 176, I feel good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel good. You know, people ask me about what time I go to bed and what time I get up. And I'm like, man, for me, it's, you know, I can handle it.
Yeah.
You know? And when I can't, my body lets me know.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Take a nap, take a break.
Yeah. Those forced naps, where you're just like, oh, shit, what's up? What's going on? You just pass out. That happens. happens to me a lot. Like, I just be like, oh, okay, I'm going to sit here and, you know, just be out. Yeah. Because I'm, like, steadily going, you know. And the other morning, I woke up at, like, 4:44, and I was like, okay, well, might as well just read, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, there's times where I'll get up way before my alarm, like, on a Sunday, right? Usually on my Sundays, I rest a little bit more.
Yeah.
Sometimes I get up early. Mm-hmm. It's just my body's just used to it. And it's like, all right, let's just get to work.
Right.
Whatever it is, either, you know, writing or projects around the house that have just kind of been taking the back burner, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever, you know.
It's always something to do, man.
There always is something to do. And, you know, the more time we waste doing shit that doesn't mean that much, mm-hmm. you know, it keeps piling up.
Man, seriously. And that's like, I man, you know, podcasts, like, I got, Lord, like over 50 episodes, you know, and I'm just like, for me, so only been doing it for probably like 6 to 7 months. That's a lot of episodes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I have more that I have to edit and put out, you know, and I have more that I have to record. So I'm like, man, you have to cut some stuff out just so things won't take the back burner and really like push these out. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like time block like crazy and focus on this because I'm also starting school and, you know, next month and I got all these things going. So I'm like, whenever you have free time, just make sure that you set a foundation and, you know, knock these tasks out. Because like you said, they do pile up.
Yeah, but the more you knock them out, what happens, right? The more you think, like, man, this is, like, I can make it happen. I can make it work.
Yeah.
Confidence builds and let's stack more on our plate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's keep pushing.
Right, right. And so it's interesting how you say you almost got a divorce. And, you know, now, bro, I don't know what's in the water these days, but I hear about a divorce probably like every week.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, golly, it's like two going on within my personal family. You know, one of my business partners, he called me like, hey man, I want to talk to you about this, you know? And he was like, well, this, you know, this is going to affect the business in a kind of way. So I'm just letting you know what I'm saying right now that I have to take care of this because of, you know, because it's going to affect the productivity and all of that. And I was just like, man, I have no idea why there's so many divorces going on right now.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, I've been married almost, it's going to be 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think most people just, I don't know, I can't say what most people's problems are.
Mm-hmm.
I know what problems we struggled with. And for us, it was communication. It was me just being selfish, you know, drinking a lot. Cause a huge strain on our relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But once, you know, I learned to just open up a little bit more, right? Once I quit drinking, it was like I had some mental clarity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wasn't trying to just push down emotions or thoughts down and, you know, my pain struggle. Like, let's just be open. Let's be honest.
Right.
Let's talk about what is bothering me, what's bothering you. You know, having that open line of communication is really important.
Yeah, and being vulnerable enough to know that you are the problem at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, because it's funny because I mostly do. I'm like, what is it about me that's causing this to happen? You know, like, is there something I need to work on in order for this person to respond in the way that I would like them to?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and once I did that, I was like, oh, okay. I kind of understand, like, not saying put the blame on yourself, but more so just figure out what you can do, you know? And you said, oh, I'm drinking, I'm doing this. Okay, cool. What woman wants a man that's going to be drinking and drunk all the time and
right.
not giving her affection or attention that she deserves?
That's, you know, pure.
That's pure, exactly. It's right. more so like, come here, baby. You know, like when you coming home all drunk and,
right.
you know, like who wants that?
Right.
You know what I mean? So, it's really good that you actually did that. It's like more so men let their ego inflate too high, where they're just like, man, she tripping, bro, and man, she this. And I'm like, well, what are you doing?
Right.
What's making her trip like that?
And what we did too is, you know, we've been in marriage counseling a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's, if we can't figure it out, like, we're first time I've ever been married, first time she's ever been married. We don't know how to work through it. We don't know what the real problems are.
Mm-hmm.
That's, yeah. Queen, man, she saved me. When we met, I was in a relationship. I had a girlfriend, and that's when I was just not happy with myself. I was 19,
mm-hmm.
20 years old, and we met. She had just turned 19. That was 20 years ago.
Really. Y'all got married like that soon?
Her birthday is in like 2 days.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a while ago. I was in a relationship, man. I wasn't happy with myself. I was in a loveless relationship. Mm-hmm. And we met, and my heart knew he was the one.
Mm-hmm.
And I told the girl that I was living with, like, hey, you know, we're gonna break up. You gotta move out. And been together ever since.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there was times where, yeah, man, you know, it was rough. And we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Like, why did we stay together through all the hardships, all the problems, all the doubt? Because us together, there's a higher purpose for us together.
Mm-hmm.
To raise good, confident children, to be an example of, you know, what vulnerability can do for a marriage, right? Being open, giving other people hope, I think. You know, I hope.
I mean, it probably is, bro, more than likely. If you tell somebody that you've been together for 20 years and you have a child that's in college, and I'm not sure how old your son is. You said 13?
15.
Yeah. That's in high school, and I'm sure he's doing well. That motivates people. And, you know, some people could be envious of it. That could happen too. But they could also look at you guys like, wow, if they did it, we could stay strong and we could do it too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it's like, my parents are married. I don't even know how it's like to have a step parent or anything like that versus the majority of people, you know, in the world. So I'm like, man, I know people have problems. I see my parents go through it. You know, I was there. You know what I'm saying? So to me, it's kind of like, I don't understand what people expect, you know, like out of other people when it comes to being with someone. You're always going to have some type of tension. Like, what is perfect? You know, what they showcase on TV is not real. Nobody's waking up, you know, looking at their spouse, smiling. Oh, I just love you. No.
Right.
It's let's get the fuck up. Let's cook. We got to take the kids to school. Let's handle this. Let's handle that. You know what I mean? It's like, all right, come on. We got work to do because we're working together to survive in this world. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
And it has to be a realistic expectation.
And it all depends on what you were shown too. Like, I mean, my parents divorced when I was, I was in sixth grade. I was 11 years old when my parents divorced. You know, she grew up without a father.
How did that affect you?
Oh, man. It hurt. You know, I think that's where a lot of my initial internal pain came from, right? I was heartbroken. you know, it came out of nowhere. Right? There was no arguments. There was no, you know, it was like no clue. And then it was just one summer. It was just like, hey, we're gonna get divorced. Like, why? How? Like, I didn't know. I didn't know what to ask. I didn't know how to talk about it. And then just like that, right? Dad moved out, and now my mom works two jobs. So there was nobody at home. My older brother, I have a brother who's 2 years older, and he kind of gravitated more towards his friends. So I just kind of, I felt alone. Like I would try and, you know, gravitate or go hang out with friends and stuff. But I think really looking back on it now, I was always like, you never, you hear people say, you know, you're in a crowded room, but you really feel alone. And I felt a lot of that. And I held that pain. I held a lot of that, right? I think that's where part of my self-destruction came from. And then once I got older, you know, I was like, okay, well, those are still just choices. Once you got older, you know, you had the choice to buy the booze, smoke weed all the time, right? That's on you. And I really learned that talking to my therapist was like, you know, let's just kind of work through. Once I got kind of through the work problems a little bit, let's talk about, you know, what hurts you growing up.
Yeah. Right? That's usually like the catalyst. I've been through a type of therapy that actually like go back to like your most childhood traumatic, you know what I'm saying, instances. And I started to learn that like, wow, I don't have as much compassion for other people because of how I was raised and the things that happened to me. You know, like nobody came to me and was like, oh, are you okay? No. I had to like take it to the chin.
Right.
And so I treated everybody else the same way. You know, it was like, I don't feel like anybody gave a fuck about me, so I don't give a fuck about anybody else.
Absolutely.
You know, so I had like no empathy, no compassion. And now I'm more so like, man, everybody's not built the same. Everybody's not like you. Everybody doesn't think like you. You know, everybody has different trials and tribulations and ways they was raised and the way they learned. And it helped me like accept people more for who they are. But I had to go through a therapy that went back to, you know, like what happened to me to make me feel that way towards other people.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Even though I wasn't like an asshole or whatever, but I'll have like some internal things in my mind to be like, fuck them, you know, like, like they can handle it. You know what I'm saying? But then I learned that like a lot of people can't handle certain things because they probably weren't raised to be like so mentally tough. You know, militant grind is because I was raised in a militant household. You know what I'm saying? But with that, I've learned that I could still be militant but still show love and compassion towards other people.
Yeah, hell yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Stern with self and soft with others.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You can still show them the way.
Right.
Right. And I used to do the same thing, man. You know, for me, I wouldn't give a shit about how people felt. I was hurt, and if I hurt your feelings, I don't care.
Right.
If, you know, if you didn't like the way I said something to you, I didn't give a shit. But it wasn't until now, you know, just, you know, I healed myself, and, you know, I want to help other people heal themselves.
Right. You know? Right. And it's interesting, man, because I talked to a lady, and she told me that a lot of her childhood traumas came from her parents getting a divorce, and that's when she started drinking and all of these things. And I was just like, wow, like I never went through that.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I can't imagine the pain that someone is going through as a child where it's like, well, my dad is leaving, you know, and he's not going to be here. And I have to see him every other weekend. And, you know, it's like, what the fuck? You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, man. So it's like, I'm so unaware of it. But when I talk to people that, you know, did come from single parent households, I'm just like, wow, you know, I'm more so empathetic towards them rather than how I was before. Because I used to say, you know, just because you grew up with two parents in the household doesn't mean that, you know what I'm saying, it was all good, because it wasn't all good. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, it wasn't like, sometimes I was like, shit, I wish they break up because this guy's getting on my fucking nerves. Like, seriously, bro. Like, my dad was, yeah, that's a whole thing. I could do a whole episode on that. But then I started to look at how like it affected people, and I was just like, oh shit, it's, you know, it's different.
Yeah, I think that for us, I mean, the benefits definitely outweigh the negatives, right? And that's why we work so hard. And I tell my son, I tell my daughter all the time, like, you know, we fight each other based off of what we think is best for you.
Right.
Because what she thinks might be the best way to handle a situation is different from how I did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like I was saying, together, I mean, like she doesn't work, right? Mm-hmm. Ever since we've been together, I'm fortunate enough to work for the city. I make good money. And, you know, she's always been there. She's been there to make them breakfast, take them to school, pick them up, make dinner every day. And I was telling my son the other day, mm-hmm. I said, you know what? Like, you're lucky, you know? You don't have to walk to school and walk home. And you didn't have to. You don't have to go home and nobody's there and you have to cook dinner.
Right.
I had to do all that shit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, your mother grew up and she never knew her dad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we're here every day for you.
He's never gonna understand though. You guys are there every day. You know?
Yeah,
but
you know, and the benefit of that too is, you know, knowing who their friends are and knowing what their friends are all about. You know, because I ask questions all the time. Who are you talking to?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he's playing video games online, who are you playing with?
Right.
How come I don't know them yet?
Right.
You know. When they want to go out or they want to get together with the friends, bring them over here.
Yeah.
Right?
That's what my dad did.
Yeah.
He allowed all of my friends to come to our house so he could basically see, you know, who we're dealing with and things like that. Because if your kid goes to somebody else's house, you never know what's going on.
Right.
You know, especially like boys, who knows? But some parents will be the cool parents and allow them to do whatever they want. And I've been a testament of that, bro. Like I've been to parties where the parents were there and it's like teenagers drinking.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the fuck? You know, like, I mean, you know, it was just different for me. And the way they justified it, they were like, well, they're going to drink anyway, so they might as well just drink here.
Yeah. Right.
And I was like, my dad would have never, ever, ever stood for that.
And, you know, I mean, I love my parents. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that they're bad people. They're good people. But it was like that. You know, it was like that. I remember my 18th birthday. I mean, we had a huge kegger at the house. You know, it was like a bunch of people. And me and my friends were there drinking, you know. And, you know, so it's like I don't want to be like that, right? I don't want to be that example. Like there's certain things that I saw that I grew up with that I need to cut off because I don't want to pass that shit on to my kids. I don't want them to grow up and, you know, towing that line of, you know, being able to handle social drinking or just falling off the fucking deep end and being an alcoholic.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to risk it. I'm not saying that, you know, that might not ever happen to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but at least knowing that I'm going to do the best job I can to make sure they don't see it from me.
Yeah.
Or they have a good head on their shoulders.
I mean, that's the only way that you really won't be able to feel any guilt is if you do the best that you can.
Right.
You know, because it's like, say, if I was smoking weed all day and, you know, around my kids and now they're doing it and they're not shit, you know, I got to blame myself because of the example that I gave them.
Like, yeah.
Yesterday, my son called me and I wasn't able to pick up. Then he, you know, pressed me this morning like, Daddy, I called you. You didn't pick up. And my daughter was like, he was at the gym. That's the only place that they assume that I'm at. You know, Daddy was at the gym. Daddy, are you in the gym? Daddy, are you going to the gym? You know what I'm saying? And I thought about, I was like, that's not a bad thing to be known for.
Right.
You know, it's better than saying, Daddy, are you at the bar? Or Daddy, are you out with your friends not talking about shit? You know what I'm saying? So I was just like, really feel like I'm just, you know, showing them a good, productive example. It's like, Daddy is working or he's at the gym.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? He's not outside smoking on the phone, laughing with his friends and stuff like that. You know what I mean? And sure. So I feel like what these kids see, the examples, you know, that they see are more important than anything. You know?
Right.
Yeah. So good job on showing them a loving, wholesome relationship, you know, that they're benefiting from. Because it's, you know, it's tough dealing with one person for 20 years. You know what I'm saying?
Especially with me. man, I love my wife to death, man. I love her to death. She's been very patient and very understanding. Even now, like me working on my personal development and trying to help other people. You know, I was thinking about it this morning. A lot of the people that I help, you know, just showing my process and what I do, it's, you know, they should be thanking her too.
Right.
I get messages all the time and I want to tell them, man, thank my wife, right? Because if she wasn't so understanding, if she wasn't so patient, you know, then, you know, I wouldn't be able to do it.
Yeah, that is true, because it definitely does take patience.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And then you have to invest so much money into your personal development to be able to help others. You know, so like, I was thinking about how much money I invested in my mind and my body and, you know, myself, period. And I'm just like, wow, you know, this is a lot that you're putting into just so you could spread a message to the world, or, you know, spread a message to other people. I mean, look at where we at now.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, look at all this.
Yeah, it's awesome.
You know what I'm saying? Like, this isn't two guys in, you know, in a living room on a couch, you know, with like a weird, this is professional, you know what I mean? And, you know, like it take, and then it's like, okay, maybe it's going to work, maybe it's not, but at the end of the day, I'm going to put this into myself and hopefully something will come about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I mean, and that's what I used to think all the time when I first started getting into coaching, and people were like, dude, you invested how much money? Like, you hired a coach? Cause I didn't know what to do. I mean, I knew how to put it together, a workout. I knew how to meal prep.
Yeah.
But I didn't know how to, you know, put together like a nutrition plan, or how to, you know, what apps to use to get people to train online.
Mm-hmm.
I hired a coach,
mm-hmm.
and they were like, man, like, that's a lot of money. What if it doesn't work? Well, what if you don't get your money back? Well, I'm helping one person. If I could help one person, though, because I'd get messages all the time like, dude, I appreciate your story. Just sharing your story, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't have any clients. But, you know, sharing your testimony, sharing your transformation. I mean, yeah, once I started getting these messages, right, from people just saying how it's helped them transform themselves, right? That's what we do it for. That's why I do it.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the best wins from my clients are when they say, you know, dude, I quit drinking. You know, my coworkers are starting to notice what I'm doing and they're asking me how can I help them? So knowing that I'm creating a positive change, not only in my one-on-one clients, but, you know, they're taking what I'm teaching them and helping people around them. It's awesome, man.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
That's why we do it. That's why I do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and people say, aren't you tired? It doesn't matter, because I'm trying to serve a bigger purpose.
Right.
You know.
And you never know when you're going to leave this earth, so.
I almost left it twice.
Mm-hmm.
You know? You know, in 2011, I was electrocuted. And then in 2021, I burned my face.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if we don't make a positive impact, you know, with the days that we have, then, I mean, what are we doing?
Right.
You know, fucking off at the bar, you know, wasting time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we only have one life. We only have one body. You know, and if we're not living it the best that we can to be the best version of ourselves for our wife, our kids, you know, our nieces, our nephews.
Mm-hmm.
So we're wasting a precious gift.
Yeah.
And I've wasted plenty of those years, you know, thinking that I was doing the right thing. Thinking as long as I'm bringing home a healthy paycheck,
right,
everything's cool.
So much more than that, bro.
Right.
That's actually a conditioning that men in America go through. It's like, as long as you're paying the bills, nothing else should matter, bro. Right. That's like that's 25% of it. You know what I'm saying? It's like, man, that's so minimal, man. Like, emotional support towards the kids, being there, you know, talking to them, you know, giving them attention and all of that. Like, that matters so much.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it's like, if you're just thinking like, man, I'll pay the bills, then it's like, you know, that's, you know, and I often tell people they, you know, some men use that as a way to like supplement what they lack.
Oh yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, well, I'm paying the bills. It's like, nah, bro, it's way more than that.
You gotta be well rounded.
Yeah. Right?
You gotta have good mental health, good physical health.
Yep.
You gotta be open. You gotta be vulnerable.
Yeah.
You gotta be strong enough to say, I don't know.
Right.
That's one of the hardest things for me to tell my kids. Mm-hmm. I don't know. You know, this is new to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, And people say, "Oh, you have teenagers now. How is it?" You know, I have friends. I'm gonna be 42 years old, right? Mm-hmm. And I have friends that don't have kids. I have friends that just starting to have kids. And like, dude, like, is it easy? Mm-hmm. I'm like, once it becomes easy, they hit another phase, mm-hmm. right? It's cute when they're babies and you learn how to clean their asses and make sure they're fed and they don't die. Mm-hmm. And then once they get to school, right, that's a whole nother phase, right? Once they hit puberty, it's a whole nother phase, man. You know, and if we're not vulnerable enough, or even just, you know, I don't know, you know, I did it. I went through the same thing, right? Obviously, I went through those same stages in my life. Mm-hmm. I didn't do them the right way. You know, I don't know. Let's, you know, give me some time. Let's work a plan out.
Yeah. And I tell my oldest daughter, like, you need to do your research. Like, if you could be on TikTok all day and play Fortnite all day, you could do research and figure things out.
Yeah.
You know, and now she's starting to do that. Like, she asked me a question. I'm like, go research it. Figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, then we could talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, then I can give you my opinion.
Yeah, let's go work on this together. Mm-hmm. You know, there's things that come up at the house and I don't know how to fix. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm going to look it up.
Same way you do the
research. Hey, why don't you put that controller down and let's come work this out. Mm-hmm. Right? Because I'm going to learn, you're going to learn it with me.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, problem solving together is like definitely a great thing that I like to do. And sometimes I play dumb like I don't know it. You know what I'm saying? Just so they could do research and like learn how to be self-sufficient, because I'm not going to always be there to answer every single question. Like you have to know how to be able to just like be intentional. You know what I mean? Like, okay, I want to figure this out. What can I do? The same thing I would do, research. Like my uncle called me like, hey, when's the times for Ramadan? I was like, Google it. Yeah. The hell? Like, because that's what I have to do. You know what I'm saying? So you want me to Google it for you? And the times change like every year anyway. So it's like, you know, if you want to figure it out, you have to do the research on your own. We got into it over that, but that was kind of funny.
Well, that's just kind of another testament to how quick people want things, right? That instant gratification. It's like, well, can't you just give it to me? Can't you just show me? I want the results really quick, or I want to know really quick. It's like, man, you got to put in a little bit of work.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. The same way like all of us would do, man. And so with all that you've been through, you know, near a divorce, the weight gain, the accident, man, I couldn't imagine being in that act. Ooh, wee. But yeah, the accident, all of that. What is like one takeaway that you would get from all the things you've been through that you would want to share with other people?
I would say, you know, just be strong enough to know you can get through it. You know, whatever you're struggling with, you're not the only person. You're not the first one that's been through it. Whatever you're struggling with, find a coach. Find somebody that's been through what you're struggling with. For me, when I quit drinking, I couldn't do it alone. I couldn't stop alone. So, you know, I had to hire a coach through a substance abuse counselor. My wife and I are having problems with our marriage. Find a coach. You know, and when I was struggling to lose weight, find a coach. Whatever you're struggling with, there's somebody out there that can help you out. Don't be too afraid to ask for help, first of all. And second of all, just, you know, be vulnerable enough to trust their process, especially if they have the results that you want.
And that was great. I agree. Because I love learning from people that already been through the issues that I'm going through, because it's like, it's more so like a fast track, you know? And I read a lot. I bought like 5 books yesterday at the bookstore. So I'm like, you know what? Learning from other people's research and knowledge is almost like a cheat code. You know what I'm saying? Oh, yeah. Like, instead of, you know, it's like, okay, oh, you wrote a book about it. You have these degrees. You researched all this. I'm sure you put some time into it. Oh, I'm going to read it. Boop. I saved myself years. You know what I'm saying? And I feel like people really don't understand that. Like, you have to soak knowledge from, you know, kind of be an apprentice of somebody else in order to master whatever you're trying to do.
And there's going to be other people out there that are going to try to give you advice. And if they're not in the position that you want to be in,
yeah,
you know, I wouldn't take 2 grains of salt from them.
No, I definitely don't. Definitely don't. Like, hey, man, maybe you should start working out. I'm like, you should work out, period.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Show me whatever advice you're trying to give me, show me that it's working for you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
If it's physical, if it's business.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. Everything. You know, not act as if, actually be what you're talking about.
Embody it.
Yeah, man. It's been a great conversation, Daniel. Yeah.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Appreciate it, man. No doubt, man. Still don't know how you came up with the last name Spencer, but we'll figure that out.
I was born into it.
Right.
We hope you're leaving this episode feeling empowered. Remember, greatness is a choice. To stay updated on our latest content and continue sharpening your edge, hit that subscribe button. Let's keep grinding together. Remember to visit militantgrind.com.